Hey everybody, what's up? Chad Wesley Smith here for the Jug Life Podcast. Today, we're doing a Q&A episode answering your questions. We talk about how we think Lasha could transfer over to powerlifting or strongman, other strength sport athletes we'd like to see try new sports. We talk some about the development of our weightlifting AI system, and Max gives you some insights there, as well as ways that weightlifting could better use data to objectively analyze who are the best coaches, who are the best lifters, and how that could impact international team qualification. Today's episode is brought to you by Roan, one of my favorite apparel brands since they sponsored the podcast back several months ago. I got a bunch of clothes from Roan, stuff like this, the Peak Polo, wear that out to the golf course, wear it on a date, wherever, as well as great stuff for the gym, shorts, tank tops, really comfortable, really just high quality, stylish stuff. I'm big, big fan of Roan. Glad to have their support on the podcast. You can use Jug Life for 20% off at roan.com. That's R-H-O-N-E.com. So go support them as they support us. Also visit jtsstrength.com for all your online coaching needs, Juggernaut apparel and books. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a 5-star review. Like the video. Share it. Subscribe to the channel. Enjoy the episode.
Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
All right, so we're going to take some questions from the fans and then just some other stuff that we've been bullshitting about all week anyways. So to jump right into it, Muhammad Nader asks how we think Lasha would do in powerlifting and strongman. And then sort of a piggyback question to that, Blaine McConnell asks about what strength sport athletes we'd like to see in other sports. And Blaine McConnell is the bobsledder that I coach.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd certainly like to see him doing weightlifting.
Yes, for sure.
He's super strong.
Yeah, he is ridiculous. Yeah. 150 snatch, right?
Yeah, 150 snatch, 190 clean and jerk at about 102 body weight.
Man, get him into the weightlifting. That's what he needs to be
at. That's with me coaching him in weightlifting.
Yeah, holy shit. He'd probably be 149 or 189 with me coaching him.
So you've seen the Lasha in person on a few occasions.
He is a big man. He is humongous.
Like 6'7", right?
Yeah, he's got to be 6'7". I will say he's not like, he doesn't have like short proportions. He has really long arms, you know? So I would say like as a power lifter, he's not built like a 6'7" power lifter if there has ever been, I guess like Kirill. Right? But I wouldn't, I mean, he's built for squatting and deadlifting for sure. I mean, he would have a monster subtotal on those sides.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and I don't think I've ever seen him do a giant heavy squat though, so I wouldn't know exactly what he could squat.
Yeah, the strongman side of things is like where it would be more interesting to see him.
I mean, he's so fucking big too. Yeah. That like all those like stone loading, all that stuff. You know, he would be really good at that. I mean, arms like that.
I mean, he is the most explosive. He would be the most explosive person to have ever done strongman.
That's true.
I mean, if a 220 kilo snatch is indicative of explosiveness, he has it in spades.
Yeah, for sure. He would definitely be. I mean, I don't know. We were talking about this the other day. You were saying that when you were training strongman, you were talking about that time period where you were training strongman and everything, you felt generally way stronger than you did when you hit your all time best powerlifting total.
Yeah.
So I do think there's going to be some effect of that where, like, Lasha's doing a 220 snatch. He's also, like, a fantastic weightlifter. Like, he's a really well-trained lifter, super good technique. So, like, how much of that would kind of not necessarily transfer over immediately? I mean, obviously, a ton of it is going to transfer. But, like, you know, he might be less strong in those static exercises. He's not going to be an Eddie Hall type. He's going to be super strong, but probably more, like, top end of the pack, but not like the top guy.
I mean, I don't think he's not deadlifting 900 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, but while he is, you know, very finely trained for weightlifting, and, you know, if
if you were just looking at like their general training, I'd almost be more inclined to think that a Gore Minasian,
yeah,
or like a Top Shape Martin Seam,
yeah, oh for sure,
would maybe be Martin Seam as a powerlifter for sure.
Yeah,
would,
he'd be a monster.
Would be, I think, better than Lasha, and because those guys stand out as like, oh my god, they're just so rugged in their
yeah.
Yeah, you know, Lasha is so smooth in his technique, but he's just the way he is moving those weights is yeah. unbelievable, and the muscle snatching.
Stuff yeah, it's just retarded. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. The like 140 muscle snatches, like
yeah.
just it's absurd. I mean, yeah, he would powerlifting. I would not think that he's going to be anything like that we haven't seen before. Like he would be great, but not like he's not going to be a Milanichev or somebody like
yeah.
that. Strongman though, I mean, he would do. He kind of, I bet he'd be a lot like Kokhaev,
yeah.
right? I mean, similar kind of build. He's a little bit taller, but you know, like probably a really good all round dude, right?
Yeah, he's not quite as maximally strong in the squat and deadlift as Kokhaev's, a 900-pound
right.
deadlifter, but he's so powerful. And yeah, I just did that podcast with Martins Leitsitz,
yeah.
the 2019 World Strongest Man. He said when he qualified for World Strongest Man the first time, he weighed 270. And he's very athletic.
You yeah. know?
So there's kind of more than one way to skin that
sure.
strongman cat.
Right, right.
And though you wouldn't look at Lasha and be like, oh, that looks like a really athletic guy. he clearly is. And his
yeah.
arms are so long that even if his like maximal pulling strength for the deadlift isn't quite there, I don't think that would hinder him in a farmer's walk.
Yeah.
Or, and he's kind of got a belly, but not
yeah, he's
not too much like...
He's bigger than he was the last time I saw him, but he didn't look fatter. He just looked like thicker.
Bigger, yeah.
yeah.
So he's 168 kilos at Worlds.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would be an interesting thing to see. Now, as far as other strength sport athletes, seeing them do a different strength sport than they've done or a team sport or another Olympic sport, and we have a whole podcast about this from the other
mm-hmm.
side
yep.
of team
yep.
sport athletes, we'd want to see do strength sports. People that stand out to me, we'll write on our own team, and since it's Blaine McConnell, U.S. bobsledder,
oh, yeah.
asking the question, James Townsend
yes.
would be quite the
bobslayer,
quite the force. You know, we had to see if lightning could run on ice, to quote the famous John Candy, coach of the Jamaican bobsled
yep.
team.
Yep.
But yeah, James, I'm sure, would be amazing in the bobsled.
That's a tough one. I mean, I know like it's like to say like, oh, I'd want to see some solid like 89, like a Harrison Morris or something play football. Like, yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, I don't know. I don't know if that would be one of those things that would really be like amazing. Cause it's like not necessarily a huge, you gotta be a good football player, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it's
one. You know, as a potential football player, someone who would stand out, of course, you know, like a Thor,
yeah,
you know, Brian Shaw, those kind of guys. But so talking with Martins, doing a podcast with him, something that's always stood out to me about him, and I've, you know, we used to train together six, seven years ago when I was doing strongman. He only weighed like 240 then. He was very
mm-hmm.
athletic, and he's maintained his athleticism really well the whole time. Going up all the way to 355 pounds when he won World's Strongest Man. And he said he wouldn't let himself like move up in body weight
right, yeah.
if he could not do pistol squat on each leg, 5 sets of 10 body weight pull-ups,
That's
and
ridiculous.
A muscle-up. And he couldn't do the muscle-up when he weighed 350, but he's done it at like 330. So I mean, he's a guy who's still very flexible. You know, seeing
yeah.
him do those Steinborn squats.
Yeah.
Like... a Martin Leitsitz type playing like defensive tackle.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's just a powerful, big, athletic dude.
For sure.
I'm trying to think of other...
Like other events too. I mean,
yeah.
we think football just because that's like where the most powerful athletes are probably going to be. But like, you know, I mean, I don't know. I guess like, I don't know what it would be like to say it'd be cool to see Ilya Ilin do pole vault. Like, it would be comical, but like... You know, I don't think any of those guys, a lot of the people that are at the top, especially like weightlifting and powerlifting, are well suited to that. And the things that make them really good at that kind of preclude them from being really good at the other like other sports. Yeah. Like shorter limbs and...
Generally, the best, like, the best powerlifting body, the best powerlifting body ever, Ed Cohen. You know, if you've never seen Ed, and I'll say this to him in person, and I mean it lovingly, he's got a weird fucking body.
Oh, yeah.
His body is...
Weirder mine.
His body is amazing for powerlifting, and it would be terrible for just about every other sport.
Yeah.
So, because his shoulders are so broad. So the way that I would describe Ed's body, if you haven't seen him in person, is he was supposed to be like 6'1", 330.
Yeah.
And then he had like a Cotton Hill type of scenario going. And they chopped 3 inches out of his lumbar spine and 3 inches out of his femur. So instead of 6'1", 330, he's 5'6", you know, 250.
Yeah.
With lats that insert in his waist and these really short femurs, but long arms and huge hands. And
the bigger question to Ed directly, if they cut 3 inches out of everything and you were supposed to be 6 feet tall, is that what you're packing down there, Ed?
He's got those size 12 shoes and his hands are as big as like
Kirill's. But he's perfect for powerlifting. I mean, the shortness.
But terrible body for everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, you know, these really great football players, basketball players, having extremely long legs and long arms, you get some good deadlifters, but it's kind of a bad body.
I would see, like, I think Klokov and Turokti would be pretty cool to see in some kind of, like, I would say like a football scenario, but like be kind of cool to see them cross over even into powerlifting. Like, I think they could do decently well. Klokov could do well. Actually, you know who really would be Vasily Polovnikov.
Yeah.
He would be a very good powerlifter. He's just ridiculously strong.
Yeah, and if given enough time, I mean,
sure.
A lot of these things, not powerlifting and strongman so much, but talking about someone crossing over to football, that's a several year endeavor.
Yeah, for sure.
Or someone becoming a shot putter or a discus thrower, like
Thor
would be very interesting to see there.
Yeah.
Or a bulked up Klokov, like 125 kilo Klokov.
That'd be cool to see.
Yeah.
He
said that he would get up to, like 125 kilos.
Holy shit.
That was the most when he was 110 kilo class.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. So he was big.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Interesting thought experiment.
So that will segue nicely to a question from Jake Frazier at JakeFrazier11. How are the current shot putters so good? That's not exactly how I phrased it, but that was sort of the gist of the question. So if you didn't see a couple days ago or probably a couple of weeks ago by the time you're listening to this, World Championships in the men's shot put was fucking wild.
Yeah.
It was without a doubt the best shot put competition ever, and I think a strong argument could be made that it is the best single track and field event of all time. You had Joe Kovacs, the champion, at 22.91 meters, like 75 feet 2 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ryan Krauser, second, at 22.90 meters, just like a half inch behind, tied with Tom Walsh, also 22.90 meters, with Ryan getting second because of having his second farthest throw was farther. And then, you know, down there in fourth, old Darlan Romani from Brazil, who broke the world championship record by like 20 or 30 centimeters, you know, almost a foot. So the guy who would have won every world championships ever gets fourth place.
My God.
That seventh place was over 70 feet. And it, you know, there's just never been a competition like that. And though it still wasn't the world record, they were the three farthest throws since the world record in 1990.
Right, Randy Barnes.
Yeah, Randy Barnes. And, you know, Randy Barnes is awesome, fantastic shot putter. He tested positive twice. The guys who had the world records before him, you know, Ulf Timmermann, East Germany. He was on steroids. Like,
I mean, that's...
Udo Beyer, whatever. Like, through the 70s and 80s, 100% of the champion level shot putters, discus throwers, Americans, everyone else, they're on steroids. As an aside to this, one of the moments that was like a glass shattering light bulb, I don't know, Yeah, I'm a freshman in college and do a track meet at Sacramento State while I was redshirting. My roommate Nate and I both competed, but both redshirting, so we weren't competing for Cal. And we go out to dinner after with a guy named Hal Connolly. And Hal Connolly is the last American to win a medal in the hammer throw. He won gold in 56 or 54, whatever. And I don't think, still no men have won a medal. And we're sitting at this Chinese buffet across the street from the...
As a shot putter would.
Yeah, across the street from the Sac State track. And we're just talking about throwing. And at one point, Hal Connolly just starts talking about, he's like, oh yeah, you know, back in 1960, or, you know, my doctor asked me like if I wanted these pills to help me get stronger. And I was like, well, of course I do. And he's like, well, those were D-ball. And then he's telling us, he's like, yeah, you know, I would call Randy Matson on the phone and Perry O'Brien and Dallas Long and these people and like, well, you know, how many are you taking? Well, I'm taking four. Well, I'm taking six. I think I'm going to start taking eight.
Nice.
And all these, like, he just listed off these names so fucking casual, matter of fact.
Yeah.
And my mind was blowing because I was like, this is the golden era, golden age of track and field. Like,
picture Chad's probably wearing like a choir boy robe here in this scene.
Yeah, I thought that steroids didn't exist at that point, you know, in that era of track and field in my mind.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I just found out, like, well, they did. It was the really good pharmaceutical grade shit, and they were all doing it. And it wasn't against the rules because there wasn't drug testing, and it wasn't against the law then.
They were just strength pills.
Yeah, they were taking their strength pills. And so, you know, when you compare the testing now and yeah, a couple of years ago when we had Jordan Clark on as a on the world championship team, he was talking about being tested 50 times in a year.
A year.
So are there people beating drug tests? Of course. You know, do I think that Joe Kovacs, Ryan Krauser, and Tom Walsh are among people beating drug tests? No, I don't.
No.
You know, I've been in that world. I've been in the world of elite track and field, you know, throwing 20 meters. I know those guys. I've been in the world of untested powerlifting, of tested powerlifting, of weightlifting. Like, you know, people who are just commenting on the internet about,
right, yeah,
oh, it's so easy to beat. You know, it's just an IQ test. Like, fucking bullshit it is. You know, that when Jordan Clark is getting tested 50 times in a year and his stipend from USATF is so bad that he still has to work, you know, 20, 25 hours a week at a GNC, like... He doesn't just have, well, you know, let me hire all these chemists to help me beat the test. Like, yeah, if you know this is the only time I'm going to get tested, I'm going to get tested at the competition, so I need to come off in this amount of time. Sure, that's easy enough to beat. It's not that easy to beat because...
Yeah, look at the Olympics.
Yeah, China, Russia, people who have entire countries helping them beat drug tests are still testing positive there. So I don't think it's an issue of oh, they're just on different drugs or better drugs than these guys who threw farther before them. So how is the level so high? I don't know that it... I mean, they're not stronger. These guys aren't stronger
than
Greg Trefalis and Ulf Timmerman and Udo Beyer.
Yeah.
So it's not that they know how to lift better. It's not that they can jump higher or jump further. So it's kind of a culmination of you know, probably more... efficient or effective strength training.
Yeah.
So, you know, great maximal strength paired with this special strength ideas, Bondarchuk type of stuff, like a convergence of those. And then just earlier exposure to better technique and better training.
Yeah.
That Ryan Krauser in particular, you know, he was a freshman in high school, 6'5", 180 pounds, like a string bean. Throwing 61 feet with the high school shot, 175 feet in the discus, because he started throwing much younger than that. And well, he has great genetics. And if you didn't know that, you know, his cousins are national champions and national record holders in the javelin. And his dad was a multi-time All-American, and his uncle was a multi-time All-American and Olympian, and his other uncle was a multi-time All-American. So he's got great genetics. 6'7", you know, 315 pounds, and extremely athletic and explosive. But they started him the right way.
Right.
Not, hey, 12-year-old or 11-year-old, let's lift a bunch of weights and get as strong as you can.
Yeah.
No, like, let's throw this and, you know, run and jump and be athletic and start to perfect your technique. Because even when he graduated high school, he was 230 or 240 at 6'7". Like, that's skinny.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's like, yeah, like you said, it's probably a convergence of a lot of factors where better methods, better teaching, less wasted energy and time, right? Like, people aren't making, sort of like sorting it out in the dark and trying to make things happen. And there's less need to correct that later on in their careers.
Yeah.
But then also, there's probably to some degree, some convergence of the competitive environment is so much more prevalent here, right?
Yeah.
How many of the best shot putters in the world are from the U.S.?
I mean, in any given year, 7 of the top 12 to 15.
Right. And that maybe that's the catalyst that kind of drives the other factors. People are more competitive. They're trying to become better. So they branch out. But then you were also saying something earlier, I think, that's
I think the exposure to good technique, even when I was in high school, 2000 and 2004, and throwing in college, my first 2 years in college, 2005 and 2006, YouTube wasn't a thing. We didn't have cameras on our phones or ones that made videos worth looking
7
at.
Pixels. Yeah. 7 by 9 pixels.
Yeah, the videos that my Motorola Razr took weren't really great to do some technical analysis on. So we'd go on Mac Throw Video, and if you were a thrower then, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And you'd download these videos, or you'd see the sequence shots or the flip books of technique. Like a flip book made of paper. I know that's a confusing concept to some listeners.
If this comes out after global warming has destroyed the planet, paper is a substance that was made from wood.
So that was how we had to kind of figure out technique. And we got to watch some guys who are great shot putters, Adam Nelson, John Godina, Christian Cantwell. But, when John Godina threw 22 meters, a collegiate record, in 1995, people had only been doing rotational technique for the shot put for not even 20 years.
Yeah.
Now put another 20 years on top of that. People have thrown further. They've figured it out more. Biomechanists, all that kind of stuff. And now you can go on YouTube and see 4K video in slow motion of the best throwers in the world from multiple angles and start to figure out their technique and your technique from it when you're 12 years old rather than when you're 22 or 25 and you're trying to change things and adjust things. So.
Yeah, for sure. It's just a better environment across every spectrum, right?
Yeah, so that rate, because the level of high school throwing at the top end has been raised so much where there's multiple 70-footers every year, where my senior year in high school, there wasn't a single 70-foot high school shot putter.
Oh,
so
wow.
The level has just been raised so much and just carries on.
Do you think that the potential to break Randy's record is there? Do you think it'll happen?
Yeah, I mean, there were, I think Joe Kovacs threw as far as Joe Kovacs could throw on that day.
Yeah.
Both Tom Walsh and Ryan Krauser were capable of breaking it.
Right.
Now, Joe Kovacs is certainly capable of breaking it. I just don't know that he had it in him that day.
Right, right.
Because if you look at his series, he had his 21.94, I think was his next farthest throw, besides the 22.91, where Krauser was like 22.30, 22.50, 22.70, 22.30, a couple fouls, and the 22.90.
Right.
And Walsh had the 22.90 and all fouls. But even his second throw, which was barely a foul, and there were some shitty foul calls in my opinion, but
right.
His second throw was probably like 22.70. And you could see him throw it and kind of be like, I missed it.
Oh, wow. Oh, shit.
Yeah. So, there are guys in shape to do it. I mean, Joe Kovacs had a warm-up throw a couple of years ago, 79 feet something, like almost 25 meters.
Oh, my God. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, they can do it. It's just about it happening, on the right day. The meet where Randy Barnes broke the world record was a meet that existed for Randy Barnes to break the world record.
Oh, right.
It was like him and 3 other guys who he picked who they were because he liked throwing with them and he liked the energy, their energy and stuff, and it was just set up for him to do it. These guys are throwing this at World Championships.
Right, so. Right. In Qatar, right?
So, yeah.
And they're going out there. Huh.
Yeah, so remarkable effort.
Yeah.
If you're a track and field fan, if you're just a fan of excellence, Find it on YouTube. It was remarkable.
If you haven't heard about Roan, you are really missing out. Roan is a men's performance lifestyle and premium activewear brand that is engineered for unparalleled quality and comfort. They're an absolute necessity for guys on the go. Doesn't matter if you're training in the gym, jumping on an international flight, they are your new go-to men's clothing brand. I've got a ton of stuff from Roan. Some of my favorites, the Peak Polo, the Mako shorts, Tech Terry hoodie, whether I'm lifting, whether I'm playing golf, whether I'm just, you know, hanging out to dinner or whatever, Roan has got something that is going to fit for that occasion. And right now they just released their new commuter collection. Perfect for looking great, staying comfortable at the office. Like for me, even though most of the day I'm working in a t-shirt and gym shorts, if I have an important meeting, the commuter collection has some great options there. Pants, polos, shorts, and shirts. Lightweight, comfortable, wrinkle-free, nice and breathable for a big, occasionally sweaty man such as myself. So go to roan.com/juglife today and use promo code juglife to get 20% off your first purchase. That's roane.com/juglife. Use juglife for 20% off at roan.com/juglife with the promo code juglife.
All right, so a ton of people ask about weightlifting AI. Are you making weightlifting AI? When's weightlifting AI coming out? Yes, we're making it. So let me just kind of talk about some of what's going into the process, to the system.
Yeah, I mean, the whole weightlifting AI system is designed around, you know, similar principles to the powerlifting, where basically what we're going to do is use questionnaires that will evaluate your physical morphology, your height, age, weight, sex, those things. And then on top of that, there'll be a questionnaire that basically gives your best assessment of, you know, the way you miss lifts, which will kind of structure for us, one, training volume, training intensity, you know, what kind of exercises you should be doing, and then it'll build the program from there. The calculations and everything for how the program's actually assembled are just, would be super boring to discuss, you know, exactly where volume goes, but, you know, it's structured in a way that the program can adapt and build, you know, either from the week size program all the way up to 20, 30, whatever, however many weeks it needs to build. And it'll use fatigue ratings like powerlifting to gauge, you know, how you adjust the daily kind of training. If it says, you know, 80 kilos for 5 sets and you're plugging in numbers that are saying, hey, this is really hard, it's going to dial those back for you and adjust just like the powerlifting would. The kind of cool thing to me is that it's able to adjust things on a big scale. So, you know, long-term program development and looking at programs from like a training cycle standpoint, you can identify a lifter and say, hey, you know, this person moves kind of slowly. So rather than say, you know, we need to do these kind of workouts or this kind of workout, you know, really you'd say that person moves slowly, they're training too heavy. So you can now take the AI and say, hey, look, they're going too slow, their training's too heavy, they can plug this in. It would be able to adjust the entirety of their training cycle, all the sets and reps, and distribute that volume and intensity to lower rep ranges, lower sets that would accomplish that goal of making the training a little bit lighter so that their speed qualities improve. And that happens on the daily basis, but the program does it in this global picture. So it's really cool because, you know, now we have the ability to keep track of a ton of different exercises, a ton of data, and, you know, dial in a huge program, but keep the essence of the program the same. So you're not dramatically changing the program to make it something totally different. You're just, hey, the volume and intensity need to change. These are adjusted daily. And, you know, with record keeping and, you know, entering in fatigue, what we call them, fatigue
ratings,
you know, you're going to get a program that's completely dialed into exactly what you need.
So, and probably the biggest difference between powerlifting and weightlifting is the technique component is so much more significant. So how is it going to deal with different technical problems that the lifter might
have? So obviously it doesn't have the ability to watch a video and change anything about that. But what we do have is really good assessments of, you know, we can, with questionnaires, get a good idea as to what's happening in your lift. If you answer questions about, you know, why you miss your snatch, oh, I miss my snatch forward. That's the most likely reason I miss it. Then we know that there's a problem with the trajectory of the bar. So we can automatically create a list of exercises based on those questionnaires as to what's going to be most beneficial to you. And this is the same process that I use when coaching somebody. If I watch somebody lift and, you know, I see the same kind of error occurring, you know, in my mind, I already know the list, but I would go to certain exercises and use those. So we've basically created a exercise library that ranks every exercise in it that the program can use on that spectrum of, you know, trajectory, bar height, issues with this part of the lift, issues with this part of the lift. And so you plug in, you know, in the questionnaire initially what you've done or what you're going to do wrong in the lift, and we'll have a good exercise roadmap as to, you know, for you to follow.
Yeah, so Max and Garrett are working hard on that, and you guys should be looking for beta weightlifting AI. Yeah, at this point I'm reticent to give any hard dates, but
sooner.
Yeah, RoboMax is on the way. So Sarah02483, interesting last name, asks us about what could be complementary off-season training for powerlifting and weightlifting. She mentioned specifically Pilates in that. I don't know that I know enough about Pilates. Sure, it could be.
They use a special bed.
Yes.
The reformer, I think.
But you know, in regards to complementary off-season training for powerlifting, you know, all this goes to the question of specificity and, you know, how far away can you get from the sport, but it still have some positive transfer. Now, that a lot of that deals with the time frame that we're talking about. If you had, you know, you're writing a quadrennial training, so a 4-year training plan, you could have things in the first year of that 4-year training plan that are very dissimilar from powerlifting or weightlifting, but still have some benefit to the lifter. You know, the example I always look at with this is Ilya Ilyin.
Yeah.
He had this time after the major competition, after Worlds or the Olympics, where he was spending 1 to 3 months doing the lifts only one time a week, but he was playing basketball and swimming and, you know, break dancing and doing whatever he does. And that was all a useful part of his bigger training process,
right?
Because it made sure he stayed healthy. It, you know, kind of gave him time to refresh psychologically, all this stuff. Drugs are a part of that. You know, he could take more time off because,
sure,
one, he had such a long training history that only doing the lifts once a week for 2 or 3 months wasn't going to degrade his technique that significantly. And, you know, being able to get on to performance enhancing drugs is going to allow him to regain fitness faster. We, you know, I'm not telling some secret that Ilya Ilyin used steroids, you know, but I don't think that negates the, you know, incredible weightlifting that he did,
right,
either, because, well, pretty much everyone who he's beating, you know, who was close to him and the world records he broke, they all use steroids too. But, you know, we saw him at this seminar in late 2013, and he was snatching 140 kilos from blocks.
Yeah.
And an extremely broken English, I think Klokov then snatched 190 or did a 190 thruster.
Yeah.
And Ilya kind of touched the weights and said, I snatch 6 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, saying he was going to go from 140, which at that day was pretty much as much as he could have done, to 190 in 6 months. And it was almost to the day.
Yeah.
Following him along on Instagram that he did a 190 snatch from blocks 6 months plus or minus a couple of days later. So for him, swimming, basketball, you know, whatever, all that stuff was complementary off-season training. But that's in a very long-term sense, you know, a year of training, 4 years of training. And he's doing it for a pretty extended period of time. So for almost anyone listening to this, their time periods are going to be compressed. So maybe, you know, you do a powerlifting meet and you're going to do another one in 6 months, you know, instead of your next most important competition is in a year or 2 or 3 years. Not to say he wasn't competing in between, but the ones that really matter. So instead of, you know, the 2 months of swimming and basketball that Ilya did, maybe a week or 2 weeks of that is appropriate for you. And then you could get into still general but more specific training. This all just exists on a spectrum of, like, you know, least specific to most specific, most general to most specific, however you want to think of it, into doing things that are going to have higher transfer to powerlifting, right, like strongman type of training. Now, is being really good at strongman make you really good at powerlifting? No, not necessarily. It doesn't, you know, it's not a one-to-one transfer that the best, you know, strongman is also the best powerlifter. We saw that with Thor Bjornsson. He was extremely good, but he's not the best ever. But there's a lot of carryover between those pieces. So doing some strongman training, doing some, you know, shorter, heavier CrossFit type workouts, which are just kind of like longer, lighter strongman workouts, will also have some benefit. If you want to do some weightlifting in that kind of time, that can be, you know, have some benefit to powerlifting, whether it's improved mobility, it's just sort of refreshing mentally, to give you a break. That can all be beneficial. Some like sport performance type of training, sprinting, jumping, med ball throws, that can all fit in and be useful. It's more about, you know, how qualified you are as a lifter. The better you are as a lifter, the longer type of period you could have like that. The longer you've been lifting, the longer period of that type of training you could have, and probably the more beneficial it will be, because then you'd be like me and just do a powerlifting meet and be like, fuck, I don't want to even think about squatting, benching, and deadlifting for a while. And I have other podcast episodes, Beers with Chad episodes, called My Biggest Powerlifting Mistake, that you can kind of get some more information on that. But how about complementary off-season training for weightlifting?
Very similar. I think the one kind of little more emphasis would be on explosive type stuff, like sprinting, throwing. You could do some kind of stuff. I wouldn't say like strongman stuff, or probably lighter, more like longer duration kind of CrossFit type things. I would avoid like weird CrossFit type workouts with a barbell, just because it could, especially for most of the people that are going to listen to this, it could deform your technique and kind of ruin it. But basically the same kind of stuff. I mean, you're going to spend time doing things that are explosive in nature, but not necessarily the same as weightlifting, right?
Gymnastics type of stuff.
Yeah, gymnastics would be really good. Bodyweight stuff is a really good option. But, you know, basically in that same realm, it's going to look a little bit more lighter and more explosive, rather than doing the, like, really long kind of, or more endurance kind of stuff like strongman would be. But again, like, a big factor is, like, the duration you're exposed to it. In weightlifting, you know, these off-season kind of time frames are going to be smaller for lifters who are lesser qualified, because when you start getting away from the Olympic lift technique, it's going to degrade quicker than it would in powerlifting. You're not going to not learn how to, you know, forget how to squat and bench and deadlift.
Yeah. And for someone who's only done 1,000 snatches in their life, you know, or you've been doing it for 6 months and you do no snatches for 1 month, then 1/7 of your training career is off. You know, but you've been snatching for 10 years and you take 1 month off, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. And so, you know, you have to remember that, like, dosing it properly, where, you know, again, don't extend that off season to be, you know, half of the length of your entire training history.
All right. So the last thing we want to talk about here is something Max and I just been talking about, driving around and eating meals and stuff, is how to go about evaluating coaches, evaluating athletes, and things that we really think could be like valuable metrics for USAW in particular. You know, this could all exist for powerlifting too, but powerlifting and weightlifting are the most objective sports possible.
Yeah.
You know, you lifted this much, you weighed this much, so you're this good at the sport.
Like,
you made it or you didn't make it. There's not a lot of, you know, not a lot of room for debate about that kind of stuff. And that's, I think I've commented back to some internet commenters, you know, whether it's about, oh, this is the best way to train, that's the best way to train. They're trying to argue with me on YouTube comments or whatever. It's like, the great thing about powerlifting and weightlifting is that every weekend, somewhere around the country, around the world, there's a way to prove what's the best way to train and who's the best. There's an experiment every weekend.
On Reddit, on the Reddit forum,
correct? Yeah. There's an experiment every weekend where you get to say, my way is the best way, and it's called a meet.
Yeah.
You go and do the meet, and you're good or you're not. But you know, the age of social media and marketing and all this stuff is kind of convolutes the issue, because whether it's people who, you know, can post a lot of good training lifts, but then don't back it up in competition where it matters, where it counts.
Yes.
Or it's just marketing that's basically just saying, we're the best, we're the best, we're the best, because there's nothing to check that.
Yeah.
You know, it's frustrating in a lot of ways, because, it should be very simple to evaluate, and particularly for USA Weightlifting, this could be a very valuable tool in terms of
absolutely
what athletes are getting more support, what coaches are getting more support, what coaches are being, you know, kind of pushed forward into higher roles, and so we talked about, you know, evaluating coaches, and I think you made a good point, and you elaborate on that, about not looking necessarily at just the best.
Yeah, I think if you're going to look at any coach's capabilities, the first thing you should do is take their stable of lifters and basically remove the top lifter. I'd say remove the bottom one, but there's probably a lot of bottom lifters. So you remove the top lifter from someone's, you know, stable of lifters, and look at what the body of work is underneath that. You know, if you have a coach who's produced one person but nobody else under them, it doesn't mean they're a bad coach. It's just very difficult to evaluate whether or not that coach or club or system is just lucking out and getting someone who's extremely talented that succeeds in spite of the situation they're in, or if it's, you know, or if it's truly a remarkable coach that's done an amazing job and does an amazing job over and over again. So, you know, eliminating the absolute pinnacle of somebody's coaching career, as, you know, kind of unfortunate as it is, it gives you a good perspective on what the rest of what they produce looks like.
Yeah. So for people listening, you know, like, pause right now. And think about the people that you listen to who put themselves forward as authorities in coaching and development of powerlifters and weightlifters. Think, who is the best lifter that this person has ever coached?
Yeah.
If you're at a loss to think of who that person is, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Also, if you identify the person, you know, so-and-so is this person's best lifter. Who's that person's second best lifter? If you don't know who that person is, not as problematic as not knowing, not having anyone good. But you know, it's certainly possible to just stumble upon great talent and they succeed in spite.
It's, a lot of it is like the unfortunate aspect of the social media age is that it's easy to design a system of coaching and training around the idea of marketing, right? If you wanted to market your powerlifting or weightlifting coaching really hard, what would you do? Well, you just have everybody train really heavy and max out all the time, because you're going to get the most possible videos, right? You're going to be able to post all the time about new PRs, different exercises. And so, like, you could very well be that as a coach, people are doing this, maybe subconsciously they're doing it, they don't realize, but, you know, that's not necessarily what makes a great coach. It's also the kind of thing where if you see that most of what's happening is big lifts and big numbers and all these things, but there isn't really an excellence happening in competition, you know, it's another good sign that somebody is they're not necessarily developing lifters or competitors. They're, you know, developing content.
Yeah. And that all depends, you know, if you just want to be a strong person, that's fine.
Yeah.
If you want to be good at the sport of powerlifting and weightlifting, you want to go with people who are making people do well at meets.
Yeah.
That is there's a lot of people who I think were much stronger than
very
me,
much.
But they were not better powerlifters than I was, because that happens on one specific day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, in regards to weightlifting and stuff, like, it would be awesome. Powerlifting has a great resource in open powerlifting to see, you know, all of a lifter's meet history and how many lifts they're making and how many lifts they're missing and their progress over time. Where weightlifting shockingly does not have that. I mean, considering it's an Olympic sport, that all the information is readily available. That and to go a step further with it, the coach side of things. And if you saw our episode with Sean Waxman, we talked about athletes switching coaches and stuff. And they, you know, how interesting would it be to you just to be able to click on an athlete's name and you see these results with this coach and these results with this coach and you can see the trends up or down based on those changes.
Well, it also gives you a chance, if a database like that exists, it gives you a chance to compare yourself against the people around you, around the world, right? Like, what is the average success rate in a competition? Does anyone know? I mean, we could all sit here and come up with numbers and say, oh, most people go 4 for 6. Could be much lower than that, you know? Maybe if you took bomb outs out, maybe it's different, but you know, not having that data is kind of an unfortunate thing because we don't have a chance to really see, you know, the metrics of what teams are doing well and that where that's coming from. Is it coming from leadership or is it coming from the fact that there's just one super good person on the team that, you know, that's all there is?
Yeah. So just some food for thought for the people there.
Yep.
Anything else? Those are all the good ones I pulled out.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, buddy.
Cool.
Thanks for listening to that episode of the Jug Life podcast with myself and Max Ada. Hopefully you learned some new stuff or at least got, you know, some new ideas happening that you can kind of develop for yourself about, you know, what makes a good coach, some ideas for your off-season training, all that. Make sure that you like the video, subscribe to the channel, and visit jtsstrength.com for all of our online coaching services, our apparel, and books. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. See you next week.